The topic tonight is about as much a surprise to me as it will be to you, I guess. When I got off the boat, John Schramm met me and said, "We're scheduling for something at 9 o'clock tonight, and it's going to be a forum on tension." And I said, "All right, I'll try to lead that." And then about noon he came around and said, "We're going to change that and do something on the nature of wholeness." Well, that's one that's on the bulletin board, and that's the law around here. So that's one we'll have to do, whether I had planned it or not. But it happens to be my favorite topic, I guess, and probably John knew that. A topic, at least importantly related to the way I've spent the last quarter century of my life, or maybe a little bit more than that. The nature of wholeness, of course, is a topic that probably only a fool would talk about, because it's too broad a topic to try to hit in one evening. There are some things that we can say about it, and perhaps with profit in the time that we do have. And if it gets, if you get bored, walk out, and I'll love you more for, and respect you higher if you've got the good sense to leave. On the other hand, I'm going to get excited about it in some ways, and so if you want to stick along for the ride, you may. Now, the nature of wholeness asks another question before we get started defining wholeness, and it would be have something to do with what is the nature of the person who is to become whole. What's the nature of person? What's the nature of man? And that brings me to a criticism. I've lived long enough in my church. I think I have loved her long enough, and increasingly so as the years go on, to be able to criticize her. And one of the things that I criticize her for is that she has taught us so very little about the nature of man. And this deficiency in our theology and in our teachings has brought about some rather devastating results. It is not enough, as was true for so many, many years, that the doctrine of man consisted of the shortest chapter in our books and dogmatics. Isn't that right, Art? Just a very short one. And then if you summarized it, which you could easily do, because it was quite repetitive, it just said that man is very sinful and in need of redemption. Now, that's true. It is certainly true. But it doesn't say enough about the sinner. It says quite a good deal about the sin itself, perhaps, or something about the proclivity towards sin. But it is not enough to try to describe this being that God has created, which he drew right up out of the stuff of his creation, this Adama out of which he drew us and then gave us the name of this creation and called us Adam. It isn't enough to say, well, he's a sinner. Certainly not. Because now we have to remind ourselves of some very profound truths, mysteries. They go beyond that which can be stated. They go into the area of a great mystery, awe-inspiring mystery. For instance, that of creation itself and that of the creation of man more specifically. He breathed into our nostrils the breath of life, and so man became. Now, you know, there are some words before that. He had created the whole universe, this delightful planet, which we have enjoyed especially today, with its blue sky overhead, and the trees and the running water and the lake down below, and the people and their smiles and their joy and the singing and the prayers and the sadness of hearing that Norma has gone through that experience that we'll all go through, and is into that great mystery that is just beyond, a mystery that is of which we know for certain that it is a mystery of joy and of peace and of great meaning and significance and excitement. But that's about all we do know about what lies beyond what we call the grave. But at any rate, out of this ground, out of this dirt, he formed us. And I don't care one single bit whether this took 14 million years or 14 seconds or 24 hours. That's not the point of what Genesis is talking about, obviously. The point is that God made us because he wants us. Now, that says something very important about the nature of the human being, the nature of the person, the nature of the one that we would desire to see whole. Now, probably because of deficiencies in our defining and describing, or even being faithful to a biblical anthropology, a biblical definition and description of man, partly because that, Descartes could enlarge upon an old Greek idea and talk about a divisible and fractionable being, and describe us in terms of body and mind, or body and mind and soul. And there's a certain validity to the concept, surely, but it suggests strongly that man is capable of being partitioned. And, well, I think society has acted upon this, and probably because we weren't interested enough theologically and in the working out of our worship and our life in Christ, because we haven't spoken clearly enough. Perhaps it is possible for the great heresy of a being that can be taken apart. Now, we've even built our institutions around such an error. So we stick a church on one corner and say the church's responsibility is towards the spiritual. Huh? Well, that's ridiculous. Then we say that the school, which we put down on some other corner down there, that their responsibility is for the mind. How in the world the mind gets there, I don't know, because it has to be come in some kind of a body. And nowadays, at least, we know that a kid that arrives at school with inadequate nutrition, a lousy breakfast, for instance, isn't going to do as well as what he is capable of doing. Or if he leaves a breakfast table in which his mother and father were saying unkind and vicious things to each other, and the kid goes to school worried about whether or not the family's going to hold together until he gets home afterwards, that he's not going to be a good student. He isn't going to think very well, because of a threat in the area that is emotional, not mental. And it triggers off all kinds of things. Some little pea-sized thing in the middle of his brain, pituitary process up in there, will start triggering off signals that make his heart beat a little bit faster because of his anxiety, and it makes his diaphragm pump up and down a little bit faster so the blood can go real fast through his veins, and it causes the little glands at the top of his kidneys to squirt out some adrenaline that supercharges his blood and makes it possible to suck out a lot of glucose or sugar out of his liver. So all of a sudden he's all kind of dressed up, but not for the kind of challenge that he's going to have in school. His blood is dressed up, but no place to go in the kind of aggression that this sort of thing triggers off. And he's left then with a residual that some people think is a rather dangerous thing to carry around in your bloodstream when you get all excited about something and don't get a chance to work it off in any way at all. But at any rate, what I'm suggesting now is that if Descartes says that we can be partitioned into body and mind and soul, he just ain't right. Because you take all three of them at least with you wherever you go, huh? And they are constantly intermingled and dynamically interrelated, inseparable at all times in all conditions of well-being or of disease. They are always tied together. There is a sense in which we could say we are always whole. That sense being that we are never able to cast aside the body and let that be parked someplace while the rest of us goes functioning just beautifully. If there's a diseased body. Or if our thoughts are all screwed up and disjointed, it's going to have an effect upon our emotions and, you know, a lot of things. I used to work quite a bit in hospitals, and one of the common things we had to contend with was that after a doctor would tell a patient that you have a malignancy, the patient almost invariably assumed that death was around the corner. And it was very difficult to convince some of them that they could have cancer and still not have a life-threatening disease, because a lot of cancers can be cured and are cured. My daughter died a few years back, Susan, of cancer. And almost nobody's ever died of that cancer since. Not because Susan died, but because of research work that was going on at the time that Susan was being treated. Got there just a little bit too late for her. But glory be. Now they know how to diagnose it early, and almost nobody ever dies of choriocarcinoma, which was a frightfully dreadful and fatal disease. Well, to come around and tell somebody that this lymphoma can be treated and you'll probably live out a fairly long life, or this choriocarcinoma is curable and we'll get right at it and you're going to be perfectly all right and it will not recur on you at any time in life. Or to say to the parents of a leukemic child that right now the lifespan of a leukemic child has already been lengthened by a factor of 100 or 1,000 or something like that, and give us another 10 years, and, you know, great, wondrous hope for what used to be the victims of dreadful, dreadful, dreadful illness, and fatal in all cases. Well, the fear that comes in because of misinformation can make you dreadfully ill. Right now, there's a lot of research going on in the area of cancer that has to do with excessive tension levels and the relation to the development of diseases like cancer and many others. The research is pointed at the possibility, if not the probability, and a lot of the money is going that direction nowadays, into discovering exploring and investigating the relationship between tension and the suppressing of the immune system in the body. Well, it wouldn't be at all surprising if this is where things are going to end up, or great steps forward at least, in knowledge, and that the peace of God which passeth all understanding may yet turn out to be the great medical reality. It is not at all impossible. And certainly it is going to be a great contributor towards health, because of the way that all parts or all aspects of this human being relate and affect all other aspects and parts of the human organism. Now, you're going to have to forgive me for saying parts, because I think it's a dirty word. We should never talk about parts of a human being, because I'm saying that a human being doesn't have parts. There may be ways in which he can be viewed, and one of the ways in which this human being can be viewed is called body, and one of them is called mind, and another one is called, not soul, I think, spirit, and another one is called emotions, and another one is called our relationships, or our capability of relationships, and our need for relationships. So I'm really presenting a five-sided or a pentagonal human instead of the three-sided The difference is that in Descartes, these were unpluggable. And you could refer the body over to the physician and say, hey, buddy, you're the guy that knows about this. You take care of it. And you could hand the, quote, soul, I'm going to come back to that one, over to the pastor, the priest, or the rabbi and say, that's your responsibility. Take it up to the altar. And you could take the mind and hand that over to the educator and say, make it smart and brilliant and fill it with knowledge. It just isn't the way things work effectively. The Greeks had a word for it. They always did, I guess. Have a word for everything. But the word is oikos. It's kind of an interesting one. You'll soon discover I'm not a Greek scholar. But oikos is the word. And it meant house. That's its basic meaning, is house. But in an interesting way, the word house became a symbol for totality and for wholeness. And the reason was that everything happened in the house. Now, you have to turn back the centuries, you know, and look at the beginnings of language also here. A house was a place where people were born. It was a place where they died. If they had an illness, it was in that house. If they laughed, it was in the house or very near to it. If they cried, it was probably centered in the house. They farmed their garden at the house. They kept their cows in the house, usually, huh? In the old European kinds of houses, remember? Where the cattle were brought in to a shed that was a part of the house itself and inseparable from it. The whole life was centered in this house. So after a while, people would say, they could say, that building there, that is my house. But they could also say, at our house, or in our house. And what this meant was, in our life, in our being in that place, in the totality of our existence, our oikos, our laughter, our tears, our births, our deaths, our body, our minds, our spirits, our relationships with each other, our emotions, our everything. This was the oikos. It got to be a word that meant totality and wholeness. Now the word wholeness, which tumbles down out of this then, from totality to wholeness, is a short step, huh? The word wholeness is an interesting word because it's the same word as holiness. Wholeness, holiness, same word. We've added little different connotations to them, and usually if we use the word holiness, people don't assume that we mean wholeness. Or if we use the word wholeness, we don't think in terms of shalom or of healing or of health. But we ought to. And for our purposes here tonight, I'd like to tie these words into the same kind of concept. Even the word salvation, though it sounds different, it comes a little bit around a different way, is out of the same kind of root meanings towards wholeness and keeping things together or restoring them to that all-in-oneness that is intended. Now, I've kind of alluded to my unhappiness with the word soul, and it's simply because Descartes has defined the word soul for our culture instead of the Bible. The Bible usually, as many of you know, usually when using the word soul, refers to not a fraction of the human being, but his totality. For instance, a very simple one would be when I referred to earlier, he formed us out of the dust of the ground. Then he breathed into our nostrils the breath of life. And in the old King James Version, it said, and so man became a living soul. By the time they translated these later versions, they had to drop the word soul because it didn't mean the same thing that it ought to mean. You see, when it says, and so man became a living soul, it says that's what he is. He's a soul. That's what he became, a soul. So this little finger, or the nail that's attached to my little, is a part of my soul, then, in that biblical sense, right? In biblical anthropology, that is part of the soul. It makes the 12th chapter of Romans somewhat more comprehensible in that those first verses were suggested and were invited and admonished to present our bodies a living sacrifice, which is our spiritual service. Well, you can tumble all through Scripture and find such references to this totality that we're talking about. Now, the newer translations use something like living being, which is stupid, because the nefesh chaya, that is the concept, and the word and the concept, that's a lot more than just living being. A donkey isn't a nefesh chaya. An ant isn't a nefesh chaya. An elephant isn't a nefesh chaya. Now, they're all living beings, huh? But what happened when he breathed into our nostrils, we became this person. I think that's the best word we can use today, is that we became a person. Because if we mean by soul, or if we're talking and say, well, that's what we became and we understand, or the other person understands that we became, some fraction of what we are, then it would be a tragedy. So maybe the word has to be parked someplace on a shelf for a few years until we can reinform it and realize that the word soul is usually a word for totality instead of a word for a fraction. Now, in working with concepts of illness, it isn't very long before you run up against some deficiencies in words like disease. Is disease a large enough word to address a predicament, which is probably better described by words like illness instead of disease? It's becoming more common today in particular philosophical writings and thoughts on health care to speak of cure for a disease and healing for an illness. Now, the illness, then, is probably the brokenness, which is what we are addressing backwards when we're talking about the word wholeness. In a healthcare institution, you run across some very interesting and dramatic examples of it. Let me just give you one from quite a while ago for me now. But one night I was on duty in a hospital as a chaplain. This is back more than a quarter century ago. But at 2:00 in the morning, the buzzer rang in my office where I was trying to sleep. And the emergency room supervisor said, "Will you please come? We've got 3 ambulances coming in." And sure enough, pretty soon, the place was all flashing with all those lights and everything coming in the middle of the night. And they hauled out 4 kids out of the 3 ambulances. The youngest was 15 and the oldest was 17. They had been drinking heavily and had gone off the tri-state tollway in Chicago at a speed of over 100 miles an hour. It was an accident. Well, that's what the police report said. The whole hospital came alive. People worked furiously all night long trying to save these lives of these 4 kids. I couldn't do anything about a spleen that was ruptured right and just torn right in two. I had no skills whatsoever for that kind of thing. I couldn't take bones and put them together and bolt them together and pin them together and put a person in traction. And I couldn't do anything to stop the fluid losses in these bodies. The blood was all over the place, of course. But I did something else that struck me as being somewhat pertinent to the situation. I went to the phone after picking up all these bloodstained identifications out of purses and wallets and out of the car, whatever, that the police brought in, or the stuff that the police brought from the car, and found the telephone numbers of the four kids. And I called, and the first one just hung up immediately and said, wrong number, and hung up. I called back, and the guy said, wrong number, and hung up. And the third time, he swore at me and told me to get off the phone. I was just bothering his sleep, and that I obviously had the wrong number. And I asked him if his daughter's name was Mary. Yes, but what that got to do with it? Well, is Mary at home? Well, who's this calling? Well, I said, I'm sorry that you didn't catch that. I said that I was calling from the hospital. Well, Mary is right here. She's up in bed. She went to bed early tonight. She went to bed at 10 o'clock. And she's upstairs in bed. Would you mind going and checking for me? Well, he sputtered around about that, but he got out of bed, went into Mary's room, came back and said, my God, she isn't there. That was because she was here. Then the father of one of the boys said, let him stew in it. If he's in trouble, let him stew in it. That kid has caused me nothing but trouble. I don't want to hear about it. And we never got him to come near the hospital. There was one couple that we didn't get a hold of until almost noon the next day. They'd been out on a wild, wild party themselves all night long and had no idea where the kids were. All right, this was the kind of thing. There were 7 divorces among 8 parents, which is kind of, well, not unusual, I suppose, but it's something of a record, perhaps. So what do you put down on a medical chart now as what was wrong, or the cause, or the etiology? Now, you can't say that it was a broken spleen. That doesn't quite describe what was wrong. Or loss of blood pressure down to 0 because they'd spilled their blood all over the pavement. What was wrong? Well, it certainly wasn't, quote, physical, period. It was physical. But it had something to do with 7 divorces and 8 parents. It had something to do with 2 parents that didn't know where their kids were because they hardly knew where they were. It didn't take into consideration the fact that one father said, to hell with them, I won't have anything to do with them. It happened that the father of that boy had a second chance. He didn't do anything about it that time either. But that boy was the first one. All kids lived. Miracle. But that father never came into the hospital, but his son was the first one that was released, and it was almost a month later. But he was released from the hospital. 30 days later, to the day, he was back in the hospital. Same illness. He'd been going down a highway late at night, intoxicated, went off the road. This time he was only going 90 miles an hour. And they called it an accident. Well, of course, it isn't an accident. It was a predictable result of something that had more to do, again, with the number of divorces in the family, the fact that the parents didn't know where their kids were, you know, all these other factors that were there. No 2 parents belonged to the same church if they had anything to do with religion whatsoever. See, these were total person illnesses that resulted in a spleen that was just torn right in two from the horrible impact. Heads that were crushed. The kid that got back in before the other 3 were out. Never did quite make it. He, to my knowledge, is still alive. But on the day that he was going to be released the second time from the hospital, discharged, his mother brought him in to see me. And she said, Johnny, I want you to say thank you to this nice man. He's been very, very good to us both times we've been in the hospital. And he couldn't say thank you. And he'll never say thank you to anybody, no matter how long he lives. Now, here was brokenness. Because, now, and these are admittedly dramatic, extreme examples that I'm giving you. But in lesser degrees, you and I are experiencing the results of these relational fractures, emotional fractures of love-hate relationships, of faulty thinking, like the kind, for instance, that opens us up to terrible fears or false hopes on, for instance, the billions of dollars that are spent for quack cures for cancer in this country and in Spain and in Greece and in Mexico. Well, a lot of other places. I happen to know three families that in the last 4 years have gone to Greece to be taken for enormous amounts of money on a treatment program that is absolutely worthless. I don't blame them for trying. So, but now that's because of bad information, in part. If somebody had been able to give them the information that this guy was an absolute quack who passes them through, does a little bit of superficial kinds of testing, and then comes back in and lets them drink some worthless stuff and charges them $300, and he sees 10 of them an hour. Now the guy's making a few bucks out of this, out of other people's misery. All right, let's get back to the, away from the extreme examples now. But every day has its brokenness or its disturbances, its straining of the wholeness in each of our lives, in some way or another, unless anybody can claim to a perfect life. And I don't know if any of us have ever had a perfect day. There was a hymn or a song once when I was a kid or for a while that had something about a perfect day in it. But because that's an illusion, isn't it? We're not capable of, since the fall, we're not capable of a perfect day. We can have relatively perfect days. For me, this has been one of those relatively perfect days. I don't know if my feet have quite hit the ground today, not even once. It didn't start by landing, by getting up here at Holden, although that's a great significant thing for me. With some past relationships and memories and all that sort of thing, it's a healing place for me. But it started when almost 100 chuckers flew across the road when I was driving over to 25 Mile Creek, and I'm just dying to get out of this place and get home, because I've got a puppy dog. It'll be his first good real season, and he better get out there and find those chuckers. This starts the day off with something like celebration for me when I see the beautiful sunrise, the beautiful Columbia River when I'm driving along it, and then think about my puppy dog that was born down in my basement one great day that I hope to get a chance to talk to you about before we get through here, not tonight. All right, now, this wholeness of which we speak is within the biblical definition of what a human being is. If we are going to talk about the nature of wholeness, we have to express it in terms of a hope. Because wholeness is always going to be a relative thing for us. It will never be a perfect wholeness. If you could describe wholeness in terms of everything included within an absolutely perfect concentric circle, we're never going to have that. There'll be flat sides to life. There'll be fractures in life. There'll be disruptions of one kind or another in life. But relative wholeness is something that an awful lot of people achieve. There are people who can walk through life and even walk through an illness with a serious illness that results a terminal illness, with an amazing amount of wholeness left within them and being expressed day by day. You've seen them. My grandfather died saying, patting me a little bit on the head and saying, "Fritz, you be a good boy. I want to see you in heaven." And a half hour later, he died. My dad told a nurse, I've had some pretty good examples of death. My dad told a nurse, student nurse, who came crying to his room in the hospital. He had been a chaplain in the hospital. She came knocking on the door and said, I heard that he was sick. I just had to come and see. And they tried to shoo her away, and my dad heard it and they let her come in. And she came in. And then he said, we don't know what's going on here. We just don't know. I've had chest pains. They're serious ones. They're worried about me. But we're having a kind of a party. So come on in and sit down. And Dad died about 15 minutes later. My daughter died while she was unconscious, but listening to a tape that she had asked to be made months before, in fact, a year before she died. She'd asked for a tape to be made that had her wedding music on it, some hymns on it, that she, her best loved hymns for her. And then she specifically said that one verse, be with me, Lord Jesus, I ask thee to stay close by me forever, and love me, I pray. Bless all the dear children in thy tender care, and take us to heaven to live with you there. She had taught her little boy how to sing it. She had hummed it one day when she left us as we walked alongside of her towards an operating room for her lung removal. And we found that she was no longer talking to us, but she was singing. And this is what she was singing. And she died after a one-hour tape had worked its way down into the middle of that verse. Be with me, Lord Jesus, I ask thee to stay. And she breathed her last breath. Well, man, I'm going to go out of this life squeaking and hollering and complaining and yapping and griping. And then I'm going to laugh. If I can't die laughing, because I think that's the appropriate way to go. I think it's really the appropriate way to go, is to die laughing. And I'd like to die laughing. I don't mean choke on something because I'm laughing too much. That's not what I'm doing. But it's the appropriate Christian posture. It's the ultimate wholeness, isn't it? To die laughing? Death, where's your victory? Grave, you know. Sting and victory, grave, death, all this stuff. Ah, death, be not proud. For death, you shall die. Now, this is wholeness. Now, let me bounce back. You don't get this in the hour of death. You better get it much earlier. And our problem is that we don't know Tevye's personality. Do you know Tevye? All right. Tevye. See what I mean, Lord? Huh? Remember how he walks around the stage and Fiddler? And... Well, you know, that's the way she is, but you gave her to me, you know, and he says to God. And, well, you know, you've got everything. Couldn't you have given me much? If I were a rich man? But always living in the consciousness of God. I don't know how much we live in the consciousness of God in that way that Tevye had. Soaked right into every day's heartbeat. Every day's breathing, every day's laughter, every day's tears. But in the same way, our consciousness of eternity ought to be woven into the fabric of every day's existence. Then, that ultimate separation, breaking, fracturing, no potter's vessel to be smashed. That's not what death is. St. Francis could hardly be improved upon. It is through dying that we come into a life, into eternal life. It's said very simply. Now, I'm not going to say that wholeness is the great goal, because I don't believe it. I think that wholeness is a great idea, and I thank God for every reasonably whole person I see. and for any evidence of wholeness that I might have within myself. But it's not the big thing. The big thing is fullness. Fullness. We may not be whole, but fullness, that's another matter. You see, he came. He didn't say, simply to make you whole, I'm come that you might have life, and that more abundantly. It's time to whoop-de-doo, and to say, wow, and to shout, and to have joy, while we dive deeply into the agonies and the distresses and the evils of this world, to roll back some of the chaos, not only for ourselves and our generation, but for a great world that ought to be preserved and kept going and not be allowed to be broken. Well, this is a rambling kind of a thing, and again, I say I have no respect for you. Anybody who'll sit around after you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're not, really not worth talking to. You know that.
What time did you get?
Oh, I wouldn't get up at 4 o'clock for anything in this world. God made only one great mistake, and that was mornings. Oh, there's a poem of Santayana's that I tune in on, and where there's a great line, no time for noonday rest nor midnight watches, no surest joy of living under heaven. You know, that's great stuff. I think the life kind of begins sometime after the sun goes down or something. No, that isn't quite right, but there is something great about the evening bull session or whatever. Don't have one tonight, but any of you that want to have a beautiful ending for the day, come to the compline in about 15 minutes right here in this room. It's a quiet, subdued, simple, very beautiful little service. And if you're too tired to do that, then go to your rest this night. But wake up in time tomorrow morning to have some fun with a great brand new day. And if in the next 10 minutes, and if you want to just sit around for a while and chat about some of this stuff, we'll be all here. Okay? Or some of us will be here.